Hey you, how's it going? My name is Ruby Price and you are listening to episode 35 of Fresh From The Scene. First things first, if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love it if you could give it a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. I'll shout out all of you who do to say thanks. And let's not forget the massive impact that sharing this podcast on social media will have. Remember to tag a friend who you think might also enjoy it. And speaking of social media, if you want to come on this podcast, get in touch. We're on Twitter at FFTScene, or let me know who you would like me to speak to. And remember to tag them as well. Yeah, you see what I mean? Right, well, we're approaching the summertime now, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing you soon. Obviously, it's great being home, but sometimes it does feel like I'm walking on uneven ground. I'm only going to draw this intro out for a couple more minutes. And that's right, let's get on to this week's guest, Alex Rejeho, on episode 35 of Fresh From The Scene.
You're listening to Fresh From The Scene with your host, Ruby Price.
Welcome to Fresh From The Scene. Today's guest is the first ever podcast guest making his exciting return, Mr. Alex Rejeho. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
I am tired. I don't know why we agreed to do this in the morning, but for you, it's the afternoon since, well, just about the afternoon.
Yeah. It's like, what? Yeah, 20 past 12.
Yeah. You know how this thing goes. You've been on before, but to start off, in your own words, how would you describe your music to someone that's never heard you?
I always say it's instrumental because you know you kind of have to, because then they listen to it and they go, "Where are the vocals?" And I'm like, "Ah."
Alex, you sent me the backing track. Where's the actual song?
Pretty much. It's like on this guitar everywhere, why? Like instrumental progressive rock kind of stuff with like pop punky influences. That's pretty much it, really.
Yeah. So we're gonna take a trip back in time, you know, like the first time I obviously had you on, you were just about to release the EP in 2019, A Series of Endings. You know, there's songs like Home, We Stay the Same, In Our Time, you know. Obviously, it's been 3 years since that. A lot's changed, a lot's happened. But, you know, that's obviously then given you a time to reflect on, you know, that EP. You know, how's your thoughts on that EP, you know, obviously changed across the time that we've had since then?
I look back on it fondly because it was the first piece of work musically that I was very proud of, and it's the first one I've worked with Josh on. But then I look back on it, and if I want to be, you know, strict about it, the songwriting isn't as good as I initially thought. You know, like the final product at the time for me was fantastic. If I compare that final product now to what's coming, It's a different ball game almost entirely. So, but very fun memories. The gig was very fun. The one gig I had until lockdown came, that was very fun. I really enjoyed that. Loved it very much. But I think everyone that's worked on it has developed greatly in 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, and like you just said, you know, you've got the debut record coming out 1st of July. I'll see you soon. You touched on this a little bit, but like, you know, how has your songcraft changed across, you know, since A Series of Endings? You know, what has gone into this new record?
Just more focus on details. So with the guitar work especially, I actually thought about what I was doing a lot more. Where the other one says, you know, there you go, you get a chord sequence. I wanted to throw in like some odd time signatures because it was also part of my third year IP. But yeah, I care about this one more. I care, like now I realize that what really gets the best out of me is having something to write about. I think that's where the change is. So I care about it more. I put a lot of more effort into the nuances of the tracks. You know, and yeah, it's just more details. Pinky punks and yeah, lots of quite a bit of dual guitar stuff. But the cool thing is, though, is that I still leave a fair amount of space for improv, which I like doing a lot. And the last EP, some may say that the majority was improv because I didn't really prepare too much.
You were kind enough to send me, you know, an advanced copy, which, you know, the songs do sound bigger and, you know, better overall. You know, it's a testament to, you know, the production value that's gone into this, you know, the work that's gone into it. You know, you were staying at my house to record pretty much all of it, if not all of it.
I recorded everything at yours, everything.
Yeah, and it obviously took, like, you know, you started it in lockdown, and then you did more of it when you came back recently, when you were playing a gig recently. But, you know, like, such a vast amount of time has gone into this, and you can tell by listening to it that, you know, it's like you say, you cared about it more. But, like, you obviously cared about it when you were doing a series of endings, but, you know, this time you know what worked better and you've been able to develop on that.
It is, like, it's just more personal. And about the amount of hours that's gone in, like, you know, me, like, the main hook for Miyama was written September 2019, when we were just finishing a series of endings. You know, like, I didn't have the story for it there. It was just, like, the idea. And then, you know, what I did later on. But, yeah, a lot more work. And I did it all at yours. And the thing is that we were going to finish recording it in 2021. Before I moved back to Gibraltar. But then I was going over to yours, you know, 3-4 times a week, and sat in the room with Josh, not doing anything apart from record. And then we'd take a break every once in a while and play some PS5. but yeah, it was very mentally exhausting. And then because we naturally we both got tired after, like, doing it for a few months, and then I started moving and we couldn't get everything. So I'm like, yeah, I'll record them in Jib. I'll record the last bits in Jib. It's fine. I'll send them to you. I'll send you the DIs. And then what happened was I came to Jib and I realized, oh no, I need Josh in the same room with me when I record. And that was quite a weird thing to... You know, like, I would try to record, like, the Summertime solo, the second verse of Summertime, I recorded in Chib during lockdown. So I thought, yeah, I could do it. But that was just because I was at it all day. And I'm, like, very much like, if there's one thing that's wrong, I will record the whole thing again. And Josh is, he's also like that, but he's also like, you need to, like, not spend 5 hours on one, you know, 32 bars. You can't do that. It's not worth it. So yeah, I had to fly back and finish it with Josh because I needed him in the same room. He gets the good stuff out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to talk about Josh later, but since we've already, you know, touched on it, you know, you obviously worked with Josh on the first EP as well. He's part of the live band as well, playing bass. Josh basically brings the best out of the people he works with. And do you find that because the two of you, you know, are so good at working together, it means that, like, you together, you can create the best possible stuff?
I don't like working with people. Like, genuinely, I don't really like, when it comes to, like, music and stuff, it's not my, I find the stuff I write, especially now, a bit too personal. And Josh is the only person that I want to work with, like, I'm the only person I enjoy working with. But he certainly, as a performer, he does bring out the best in me, me being the performer. And the thing is that this project is as much his baby as it is mine. Like, you know, my name's on the cover, but Josh has done an insane amount of work on it. He's a very stoic person. It's very much his baby as much as it is mine.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously Summertime, the lead single, was released last summer, I think it was.
Yes.
It was in my top five songs of the year, and very much well-deserved positioning for that, I would say. It was an absolute banger. But yeah, tell me about, you know, Summertime. You know, obviously, when it comes to writing instrumental music, it's a lot harder. I would say it's a lot harder to convey the meanings of songs, but you've obviously still got melodies and scales and keys and all of that shit. So, you know, like, what is Summertime about, other than, you know, possibly summertime?
It's interesting you say that. Because when people write stuff, a lot of the meanings, especially like in you know, general pop music, come from the lyrics. And that's what people latch on to at first. They go, oh, that's a really sick like line, and that really speaks to me. With instrumental music, it's a bit different. So, but you have many tools. You know, as long as you know what you're doing and how you're doing it, you know, you don't have to know all the theory in the world. If it sounds like what you want to convey, then, you know, do whatever you want, it's fine. Ears are better than, you know, than pieces of writing when it comes to music, I think. Anyway, but yeah, Summertime is about reminiscing on memories and what I experienced as a kid growing up in Gibraltar during summer. Especially summer, because I would go to the beach every day as a kid with my auntie. And then later on as a teenager, the beach wasn't just a day thing, it was a night thing. And we get, you know, absolutely smashed with all my friends, you know, during the summertime. And then, like, you know, we'd go for midnight dips and stuff. And usually I would refrain from going into the water at midnight because I don't like being cold. You know, big reason I moved away from the UK. But I don't like being cold. But I used to do it sometimes anyways. And it was fun. Like, I have a lot of memories that are associated to summer and fond memories that I hold very, very dear to my heart. And it's all about enjoying a summer and reminiscing on my past memories. That's why, like, there's a harmony change in the very last chorus, and it gets really intense with, like, you get the, you know, the pop punk drums coming in, and it's almost like giving up. And it's, you know, you start with a cool vibe. It's in seven, so it's kind of like I wanted to make it a bit off-putting. But then you get the and that's a bit groovy. You get the side stick with like the 3-4 thing, and you know, it's a bit dancey. But then you get the solo kicks in, slightly cathartic, and then you get the last chorus, changes to harmony, the intensity changes, like, so like giving up and just like wishing you could relive those memories, and those memories are taking over what you're experiencing now. I'm at the beach now, and all I can think about is when, you know, my uncle used to make these amazing hot dogs with like his caramelized onions, and they were the best ones ever, still to this day, and I will never forget them, and he only did it as a treat. But I'm at the beach with my friends, and I'm thinking of something else. I'm thinking of my prior memories, yeah. Which is quite hard sometimes.
Yeah, so it's a bit nostalgia based as well then. So obviously there is also the album's called I'll See You Soon. There are three tracks on the album called I'll See You Soon, and it's all kind of based around that one hook idea. Tell me about how that came about, because, you know, you could very easily have just done one song that's a bit longer, but instead you've, you know, broken it up into three parts, started off the record with it, finished off the record with it, and obviously there is I'll See You Soon part two in the middle of it. First of all, what's I'll See You Soon about? And then second of all, like, you know, what prompted the idea to have it being this recurring thing throughout the album? Big question.
So the album's about, I think it's very relatable for people that have left their home. And like I left Gibraltar to study in the UK, and I left with excitement. And then I came back to Gib for the summer. And then I left back to the UK, and it was, the lifestyle became monotonous. It wasn't exciting anymore. It was just like, oh, I'm in uni now. Like, oh, okay. I'm in a new place now, but it's not new anymore. And so it's just like you're getting used to the monotony, and you start realizing that you're living two different lives. Half the year you're in one place, half the year you're in the other. You always have a lack of closure in terms of relationships. People, like if I had friends in third year while I was in second year, they'd move away and I have no chance of like, you know, and I don't like, you know, messaging people online and stuff. So like, you know, if you did, I'd just rather talk to you in person or just message and meet up with you. But yeah, after that, you know, accepting the monotony, the last act, you know, the last act of the album is all about desperation and making the final choice. I got very homesick. But it wasn't homesick like it was at the beginning. It was homesick at the beginning was like, yeah, I miss my mom, I miss my mom's food, I miss my granny, and I miss the rock. And it's just like, yeah, but it's fine because you're having a good time and you're making new friends and you're enjoying it. But at the end, it's like in the final act, it's just like, I miss home. Like I am desperate now. Like it's a slight, not a cry for help, but like, you know, emotions are getting quite intense. They're coming to what you think is going to be the time you need to decide whether you're going to stay where you are or go. And it was really difficult for me to choose. Like I ultimately ended up coming back to Gibraltar. I'm happier. I am happier here by a long shot. And I'm very glad I came back. But I really miss Hubs.
Yeah.
I miss my friends. Yeah, I really miss my friends. It's rough. And it's not saying that I don't have friends here. I love my friends here. But when you grow so close with people, especially like myself, with like the people in your household, it's different. It hits different. It was very much like my family when I was in the UK. So, but it's a trade-off that I ultimately had to choose, and that's how I went about it. And then underneath that story, underneath that downward spiral of like excitement going into desperation, then, you know, ultimately having to make the choice, you can't live two different lives fully. You know, it's horrible. Underneath all that, there's a massive sense of nostalgia. Not so much at the beginning of the record, but secondly, from the second act onwards. At the beginning, it's just it's not nostalgia, but you start wishing you had a little bit more time for the things back home. So like a couple more minutes is called a couple more minutes, because like I want a couple more minutes on the phone with my mom, but I also want a couple more minutes on a night out with my mates in the UK. And it's never enough. You start feeling that I'm not being satisfied in any situation that I am in. Yeah. In terms of, you know, me being an only child as well, I need all the attention all the time. So but yeah, and the way, okay, so that's pretty much the album. But the way it came about was I was at Fiona's house. Fiona's my partner. And they usually go to bed early. I say early, early for me. Like I go to bed at like 2-3 in the morning, but they go to bed about 10:30, 11:30-ish. And I stayed up and I stayed in the dining room and had my laptop and I, you know, plugged my guitar in. And I was listening to a live stream on Instagram of two guitarists that I really admire. And I'm like, I don't want to listen. Like, let me write music like they write music. You know, not saying I'm writing the style that they do, but it's just like, well, like, just work, just get stuff out. And I wrote I'll See You Soon Part 2. didn't write the whole thing, obviously. I wrote the main riff, and I wrote what I thought was going to be the verse, but we changed it. And then I wrote the bridge, what I thought it was going to be, and then it got changed as well. And then I wrote the chorus, and the chorus was an interesting thing because of the melody. Da, 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 da. Like, it's, I don't know, it spoke to me kind of weird. And it was really simple. It's a simple melody, super simple. The harmony underneath as well is simple. But it spoke with a lot of clarity, and it sounded like it had to say something. And this was, you know, this was a time where I was starting to, this was like 2020. And I was just started my master's and stuff. I think so, or like I'm halfway through my master's or something, I don't know. I was doing my master's. And I was at my partner's house, and I really, really enjoyed being there. And the family vibe is not my family. Well, they are my family now. But it's like, you know, I really, really enjoyed having like a whole, like it felt like a home base. And I get on really well with them, you know, and I love them very much. But at the same time, I was feeling that. And I was thinking of my mum. I was thinking of my granny and, you know, my uncle Paul, and you know, my dad, my brother, so and my uncle Alex and my auntie Maria and my cousin Grace and my cousin Joel. Like, I have a big family, but like it was like a lot of stuff was flooding in. And I called Josh the next day and I go, Josh, I have an idea. And he's like, Jesus fucking Christ, Alex, okay, what? which always happens, right? And I still do it to this day. I just call and be like, look, this is fantastic. Anyway, I give him a ring and I'm like, look, I have an idea for this album and I think it's going to be called I'll See You Soon. Like, oh, okay. So the album name was solid from the get-go. And I told him what I kind of wanted it to be about, and he's like, yep, well, that's a really good idea, Alex, but do you have anything to do about it? And I'm like, yeah, well, I have this, and the melody was the thing. It's like, yeah, okay. So then I started organizing the album, and there you go. And the reason I decided to like keep the melody was because, yeah, it spoke really well in that chorus, but I wanted to give it a different meaning, like a kind of a leitmotif for the phrase "I'll see you soon." At the beginning, it's full of excitement. Yeah, I'll see you soon. Yeah. You know, woohoo, I'm leaving. See you soon. It's fine. You know, you say the phrase very quickly. You know, it's not like in the first song, it's not the focal point. It's a verse and it's a riff, you know. And then at the end, you get that, like, you know, the really big cathartic, the melody section at the end of part one. It's like, that's a see you soon. I'm going off and I'm going to enjoy myself and it'll be fantastic. Then in the part two, so longer song, the melody comes up more often. It becomes a chorus. And you start to say, I'll see you soon again. And every time you say, I'll see you soon, at least in my personal experience, and like not saying like as the album, but just saying I'll see you soon to people, it gets harder. And it got very hard. It got very, very hard indeed. And then with, like, you know, I'll see you soon part three, you can obviously see that's very cathartic. That's like, you know, big, you know, totes emotion, right? Very emotional track. And like I end on the melody, and it's like the big, like the final I'll see you soon, in the sense of I can't say it anymore. I don't want to say it anymore. Just let me be where I am. And if I go somewhere and I see some friends, I never say I'll see you soon, because I know I'm gonna go back. Like, you know, especially with lockdown. Like I didn't know when I was gonna see my partner again. I didn't know when flights were going to come back on. So you know, seasons of uncertainty were a thing I would never want to experience again.
But yeah, so it's obviously, you know, a very personal record, and, you know, like, it is emotive. I've cried several times listening to the version that you've sent me, which, you know, I will never forgive you for, because how dare you make me feel something, you utter bastard.
I know, right?
I'm supposed to be like a stone hard emo, but, you know, anyway. Yeah, so obviously there is the live concert coming up at Inter's Hall Theatre in Gibraltar. You obviously get to play such a personal piece of work at home. You know, like,
yeah,
you're obviously excited for that. You know, what can people expect from this live show?
I saw an interview that Gabriel Moreno, he did a concert, same in Inter's Hall, and Daryl Byers filmed it along with doing like interviews in between with band members. And the basis of his project, I don't remember his name, but he said, after leaving your home and going back after I don't know how long, the home audience is the hardest audience and the easiest. It's hard. No, it's easy because they want you to thrive. And it's hard because they know all your misdemeanors. They know what you're like when you were a teenager, but you're not a teenager anymore. You have to like remake, you have to, you know, make a name for yourself again, in the sense of like, this is who I am now. This is, you know, this is me as a person. I'm not that annoying, egotistical 15-year-old anymore, which is understandable. It's from the last time you knew me. I haven't seen you in so many years. So the only point of reference you have is from me when I was that age. But yeah, so it's quite a big thing playing at home. I'm very nervous about it. I'm excited, but I'm very, 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 very nervous. But what they can expect, though, is some bops followed by some bangers, right? And hopefully they will be able to relate to the story. I think that's what I really want to do, just to get, because everyone has their own story, you know, everyone has their own life. And I don't want them, when they look at, I don't, when they listen to my music and they listen to, and they see me perform, and they see like the visuals I'm going to have of like old family videos and stuff, I don't want them to think, hey, it's about this person and their thing. I want them to apply it to themselves. You know, like, ah, shit, remember when I was that? I'm like, oh, you know, my mother, and then reminiscent to their own thing. Yeah, when I was a young boy, my father
took me over to Gibraltar to see a guy
called Alex.
Yeah.
Proceeds to make everyone cry.
Exactly. But yeah, so, you know, are we getting the album in full at this concert? Because there are obviously some songs on there that would be a bit harder to translate live with, you know, some of the things that go off. But, you know, would we get the album in full?
You will get the album in full. You will get part two, Myanmar part two, at the very beginning of the concert. Myanmar Part 2 is a bit of a heavy one, to be fair, and it's a noise piece. It's just noisy, but hopefully it conveys what I wanted to convey. Part 2 was quite interesting, actually, with the mixing process. It's very recent, like, you know, we finished a couple of days ago, but it was hard, because when I listen to it, I don't want to listen to the music. I want to listen to my family's voices. And I found it very, very difficult to know. I know what I wanted, right? And for some reason, I did not care what the listener wanted at all. Right? Like it's a bit of a weird one. Like, you listen through this album, yeah, you get all these shreddy guitar and you get, you know, some decent riffs and whatever, whatever. And then you get this like art. Well, you get some riffs, right? And then you get like this artsy fartsy noise piece with lots of like old video samples that were clipping, you know, when they were recorded. And I just wanted to listen to them more. I wanted them to be at the forefront. And Josh was never rude about it. You know, he pushed back on my thoughts on that. And I was still adamant, And then, you know, he talked some sense into me being like, look, the moment he said, it's not going to be a comfortable listen for the listener. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I want people to listen to this album as well. It's not just for me. And then I got Fee to listen to it. And, you know, she agreed with Josh in the sense that the samples have to be turned down. It was just too much. And, you know, I agreed with them ultimately. But it took, I don't know, like I had to like step away from it and let Josh decide everything pretty much because I couldn't.
Yeah, you almost had too much of a stranglehold on what you wanted the idea to be that you needed someone else to come along and be like, mate, like other people are going to listen to this too.
Yeah, pretty much. I felt a bit too attached to it. Like I've worked with sample stuff before from like old videos and stuff. And I quite like it. It's you know, it's very, I think it's very cool. And every time I've done it personally, I've always put the samples right at the front, like right in your face, because I want to listen to my granddad speak. I want to listen to my granny speaking. Don't give a shit about the music, right? The music's there to support. And I was kind of the same mindset with this. And it's just like, no, it's not the right thing to do. But it's going to open the concert, and when it opens the concert, we're making a different version where the samples are at the forefront.
Yeah.
Because I think for the concert, it's needed, because, you know. Anyway, yeah, that's mixing me on the part two.
Yeah, you're going to be setting everybody up for the hour or so of emotive guitar playing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But yeah, you obviously had sort of like the warm-up show a couple of weeks ago at Woolstock 2.0 at Parish back in March, I think it was. Obviously, the
yes,
first,
we did.
You know, Vallejo gig since November 2019 when you did the first one. You know, people were vibing to that. You know, I know that you were worried that people wouldn't really kind of, you know, appreciate it. But, you know, I was in the audience for that, obviously, because I was holding a camera. But you know, people do love your tunes, mate. And, you know, live, you know, in, like we say, when it's in Ince's Hall Theatre, you know, in that home bit, you know, the atmosphere for that is just going to be completely electric.
I hope so.
Yeah, they're going to be hanging on every single note.
The Woolstock thing was interesting. It's the first time we've played as a band live. It's the first time I've played live since, you know, played live properly since the 2019 gig. Yeah, I was very much in my head about it. I was very, very nervous. But ultimately, I think it's, even though there was like one big slip up that, one slip up that the band did, and then one big slip up that I did. But it was good though, because we know what we want now when we're on the stage.
Yeah.
Which is helpful. The thing about Ince's Hall is that it's all sat down. And the problem I have with the album is that the first bit, the first half, I want people standing. And then the last half, I want people sitting. You know. I think it's going to be good that it's not going to be sat down to get to read. Like, I want people moshing every time. They're not going to mosh. It's not music to mosh to. But I want that kind of vibe because I think it's fun and energetic. Like, my favorite gig that I've ever played was with Isaac. And Isaac said, yeah, my favorite gig. Parish was booming. Like, it was filled to the brim and everyone was dancing and having a good time. And, you know, it was well fun. And I love those gigs. But I think, you know, but for the album launch, I think it has to be sat down.
Allow people to soak in the music that's playing and, you know, take note of the details and stuff. Whereas, like, the next time it comes around, that's when people can go fucking mental for it. They're going to lose their fucking minds to some instrumental prog guitar.
Yeah, like I think like with the set list for the next gig, so they're gonna be all the very active songs, like part one, part two, Libra, a couple more minutes, Summertime, obviously, and then we'll throw in, what's it called, Ruby? What's it called? We Stay the Same, and I think that will be like the set list for like the future gigs.
Yeah,
All the harder, all the harder songs, though. All the hard ones. This is what I hate. Now I've start. I put all the ones that I find difficult the start of the album. So I'm starting the concert with, I think, the hardest solo on the album, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you can get it out of the way
There it
then,
is.
at least.
If it goes well, then the whole thing will go well. If it goes wishy-washy, then I just need to recuperate myself a little bit and, push forward.
One final big question then. What's the biggest thing you want people to take away from the debut record when it drops?
What do I want people to take away? It's a massive kebab.
Some fries on the side.
It's not up to me to decide.
It's a very smart answer.
They listen to it and they get what they want from it. I can tell you what the album's about and I can tell you everything, but ultimately it's not. I've made this so it can be personal. It can feel like a personal experience for each individual. If I tell you it's about me leaving Jib and it's about all the nostalgic feelings I have, they'll be like, okay, fine. But I'm not going to explain the songs as I come along. I'm not going to have like a little mini I'll see you soon, part one explanation. It's what people want to get out of it, or what people just get out of it, not naturally, without any expectations. Obviously, like they will see that it's quite emotive, like the album cover and the actual name of the album, I'll See You Soon. It's like, oh, what's this about, But yeah, what people get out of it is it's on them, and I just hope their stories can be, I don't know how to say it, not explained, but supported by the tunes. I think that's the one. Like,
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to the quick fire round just to wrap up everything. So
oh, I'm not good at that. I talk for ages, Ruby. I can't do quick fire rounds.
well, the rules are, it's A or B for the most part. There are two questions at the end that are very a bit more open-ended. Where you just say the answer, all right? You just say the answer. So let's go. MIDI instruments or real instruments?
Both.
That's not A or B.
Oh, I
You're
thought you meant
breaking the
applying to the
rules.
album. Okay, start again. Like, what do you mean, MIDI or
What do
real
you
though? Like,
prefer?
what I like? Oh,
Yes,
real, real, real. There
absolutely.
we go.
Intimate gigs or bigger gigs?
Intimate.
Intimate. E flat minor or D sharp major?
Their chords. Move on.
Pro Tools or Logic?
Logic by far.
Yep. Streaming or physical media?
Physical media.
Bedroom or studio? Studio.
Studio.
Even though you recorded your entire album in a fucking bedroom in my house.
Hey, best memories, right? Best memories, but just for workflow and like,
Yeah.
good mental space. It's good to work outside of the house.
Yeah, I do agree. I just thought I'd call you out on it. Song on repeat.
Yeah, guilty as charged. Yeah.
No, what's your song on repeat at the minute?
Oh, 5 a.m. by Alexei Baglietto. He released it yesterday. So a little shout out to him. He's also opening the concert in Insys Hall. So yeah.
An album of 2022 so far.
When did this album come out? Okay, album of the year. You wanna know what it is? Right, Ross Motomami by Rosalía. I think it's so cool. I don't know what it is. It's not usually music that I listen to, but I absolutely love Motomami by Rosalía.
Nice.
There you go.
Right, that's the quick fire round done. You can relax now. But yeah, whilst I've got you, where can people find you? Where can people get your music? and how can they get tickets if they want to come to the Inter's Hall Theatre gig?
So you can find me on Instagram, Alex Vallejo Music. You can find me on Facebook, again, Alex Vallejo Music. You can get the album from my Bandcamp when it's up. So just obviously Alex Vallejo Music on Bandcamp, I think. And you can buy tickets for the show on buytickets.gi.
And also whilst you're here, you know, is there anything in particular you want to plug? Anyone you want to shout out? All that jazz.
Shout out to Alexei Baglietto. And his latest single came out last night or the night before. No, it was last night it came out, I think, or yesterday. 5 a.m. Shout out to Alexei Baglietto for his release, 5 a.m. Big shout out to my guys, to Josh, to Josh Fielden, Kieran Bones, John Wallace, and Peter Reitrek. I think that's how you say his surname. And anyway, shout out to J2 Events, because they are, you know, putting a big hand in organizing the actual concert, and without them, it won't be happening. Shout out to Gibraltar Broadcasting Corporation, GBC, because they'll be filming it as well. Yeah, quite a few people involved in this. And shout out to Fresh Entertainment, then they'll be supplying the lights and sound for the event as well.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, Alex. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting.
Thank you. It's been nice.
Yes.
You're listening to Fresh from the Scene with Ruby Price.
Thank you very much for listening. I do hope you enjoyed that. If you did, please consider taking less than 5 minutes to leave a review and give this podcast a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at FFTScene, that's FFTScene, or you can find me on the socials at Rubes, that's RUUBEZ, or possibly Rubes001. Mostly, I think that's just Instagram actually, but you know. With any luck, I'll be back next week with another guest, but until then, I've been Ruby Price, and this was Fresh from the Scene. Thank you very much, enjoy Pride Month, and goodbye.